Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page is Afghanistan, spring fighting season begins, focusing on the start of the country's deadliest time of the year. The yearly spring fighting season has broken out in Afghanistan as the Taliban launched a deadly attack against government forces in retaliation for the assassination of several of their leaders. The insurgents struck a military base outside the northern city of Mazar-e-Sharif, though the full extent of their assault has yet to be verified. While official tallies have veered between roughly 130 to 150 deaths, Voice of America reported that Afghanistan's largest television station, Tolo News, put the figure much higher at more than 250 and accused the authorities of a cover-up. Regardless of whatever the true number is, the fact remains that this attack was an astounding success from the Taliban's perspective, considering that it was only launched by a handful of operatives. In order to understand why such a dramatic attack happened, recent events need to be placed into context. The Afghan National Army had supposedly assassinated a few key Taliban leaders. And just a few weeks ago, the U.S. dropped the so-called mother of all bombs near the country's mountainous border with Pakistan. Although Daesh and some of its Indian members were the targets of that strike, it may have raised fears among the Taliban's leadership that they, too, could be next, which could have contributed to pushing them to take the offensive in ordering the attack on the Mazar-e-Sharif base. The aftermath of that onslaught led to the resignation of Afghanistan's defense minister and army chief of staff, and shortly thereafter, U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis paid an unannounced visit to the country to boost troop morale. It shouldn't be forgotten that the U.S. still has approximately 8,000 troops in Afghanistan, alongside around 5,000 from other NATO and partner countries. And Mattis's visit was read by some analysts as signifying that he may be seriously considering a so-called troop surge in order to assist the embattled Afghan National Army. Reuters reported in early February that the U.S.'s Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction estimated that government forces could only claim to control or influence 57% of the country. So the Pentagon will surely have an uphill battle ahead of itself if it's serious about the rumored troop surge. Putting two and two together by pairing the Taliban's latest attack with the U.S.'s presumed military plans, this year's spring fighting season already looks set to be one of the most turbulent in recent years. So to begin our discussion today for this last section of Trendstorm, we're joined by Mr. Shahid Reza. He's a geopolitical analyst currently serving as the director of the geopolitical research project Command 11 Consulting in Islamabad. Hello, Shahid, and welcome to our program.
Trendstorm.
All right, Shahid, the immediate aftermath of the Taliban attack was astounding military casualties, horrible press for Kabul, the resignation of the country's top two military officials, and U.S. Secretary of Defense James Mattis rushing to Afghanistan on an unannounced emergency visit and hinting at a troop surge. In view of all of this, how successful was this attack, and what do you think the Taliban will do next?
Okay, Andrew, if you look at it from the perspective of the Afghan Taliban, in my opinion, it was a highly successful attack because it not only sent the national unity government in Kabul into disunity, it basically sabotaged the government. Two of the highest ranking officials in the defense ministry, they had to leave the government. They had to leave the positions. And the second aspect of this attack was that it also sent the United States into panic, and they had to send General James Mattis to come down and reassure the Afghans of their support. So if you carefully study this attack, and I've been following it as soon as it happened on Friday, it's a psychological impact. So yes, there are a lot of casualties. It's a massive attack. Some are citing nearly 200 casualties, and its major effect is psychological. It's demoralizing an already demoralized military. The Afghan National Army is suffering from enormous battlefield casualties. Battlefield attrition rate is very high. Desertion rate is very high. So the psychological impact of this attack alone is quite significant. The second most important element of this particular attack is that the Afghan Taliban, they are looking for a quote-unquote capture and control strategy. They already control about 40 to 50% of the territory, which is the highest percentage of Afghan territory held after 2001 invasion of Afghanistan. So they're very emboldened at this point in time. They feel that they can exert power. So if you look at the trend, in my opinion and in my analysis, I would say that the Taliban are not looking for any more spectacular attacks after this particular attack. So they will focus their strategy on capturing and controlling territory, gaining their influence, and also at the same time leveraging their battlefield success on the political arena with the National Unity Government.
Yeah, I mean, these are some pretty good points, Shahid. You know, overall, the U.S. military seems to be more focused on Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and East Asia in positioning against Russia, Iran, and China, respectively. And some people think that the war in Afghanistan has been put on the back burner because of this, while others argue that these strategic circumstances have made it all the more important as a result. So, Shahid, my final question to you is, where do you stand on this debate?
Look, this is a very interesting question, and for me to take a position is very hard because the dynamics in Afghanistan are changing exponentially at this point in time. It's a very interesting time in Afghanistan. First thing that I want to say today is that Afghanistan has never been on the priority ever since 2001. In 2003, Americans invaded Iraq, you know, to look for the non-existent weapons of mass destruction. So they had divided priorities, and then the Middle East started to turn into this quote-unquote Arab Spring, and all the reshuffling and redesigning the balance in Middle East started to happen. So now the way I see it is that after the Arab Spring and the Americans also trying to cultivate their influence in so many different regions, in Korean Peninsula, in Middle East, in Iraq and Syria. American forces are present in Syria as well. So in my opinion, in Afghanistan, this is the beginning of the second great grain. I know it's a very big statement to make, but I would back it up because you have to understand that the instability-stability paradigm in Afghanistan is quite interesting because the instability in Afghanistan, it actually justifies the American military presence and occupation of Afghanistan. And they are now trying to preserve the influence they have cultivated since 2001 in Afghanistan. And it has very little to do with Afghanistan itself. It has very little to do with the Afghan Taliban. I mean, it's quite interesting. Why don't you allow the second faction of the Afghan civil war to assimilate politically into the government? You have allowed the Northern Alliance to assimilate into a political force and form the quote-unquote National Unity Government. Why aren't you allowing the second force in the Afghan civil war of the 90s, the Taliban to assimilate politically? Because if that happens, then America does not have a reason to stay in Afghanistan. And if Afghanistan becomes completely stable, then the United States cannot justify its existence, and it won't be able to manage the regional geopolitics according to its own design. Because if you take the multipolarity, which is led by China and Russia and supported by regional powers like Pakistan and Iran, and possibly Turkey, I would say that this is a very interesting chessboard right here, because the Americans are finding another new phase of interest in Afghanistan, because all the regional countries, they have kind of formed as a soft alliance, and they are moving towards a systematic alliance in the future where they would try to seek some kind of peace resolution in Afghanistan, which actually fits with the regional setting. But the U.S. is now getting reinterested in Afghanistan in order to stop that regional project, because that would embolden the multipolarity, which is against the interest of the United States. So that's why Afghanistan is becoming hot at the moment. You know, they're bringing it back in the news. They're talking about a surge. They dropped a massive bomb there. It didn't really do anything, but it did make huge headlines, and all of a sudden everyone was talking about Afghanistan. So it's a very interesting time for Afghanistan, Andrew. And I believe this is the beginning of the second great game, and it would decide the future of our region.
All right, Shahid, thanks very much. I mean, that was a very powerful assessment, and you give our listeners a lot to think over. Thanks very much for sharing that with us. Now we're going to switch over and speak to Ms. Sabana Siddiqui. She's a foreign affairs journalist and lawyer from Pakistan. Hi, Sabana, and thanks for coming on our program.
Trendstorm.
All right, Sabina, the Taliban isn't known for its influence in northern Afghanistan, but here we go. We have it attacking Mazar-e-Sharif. So what does this say about the group's evolving ground strategy in Afghanistan?
Well, the Taliban does want to extend its influence as far as it can within Afghanistan. and advancing to the north shows that it wants to consolidate its aims in the country, and it wants to make it, the presence of Kabul government even more shaky, and it is already popular with the locals, so it is managing to make great headway in its plans. And like you saw in 2016, they took over Khanabad and Kunduz, and it was effortless, and they just walked in. Actually, all this is happening because Ashraf Ghani has not been able to win over any support. And Taliban forces might also extend their control of the provinces in which they already have a heavy presence. And as it is, they control nearly half of Afghanistan, you could say, give or take a few, percentage here and there. And Taliban might focus now in the immediate future on capturing provincial capitals and succeed in doing that. And they are much more consolidated today. And they are perpetually gaining territory, and the Afghan forces are ineffectual and corrupt, and they have their own set of issues. They haven't been trained properly, and they're ghost soldiers in there, and they just cannot deliver, cannot face this force, which has more like they've got inspiration, and they've got local popularity. You know, so Afghan government, I see them rapidly losing control over many districts, and the U.S. drawdown has not ended in Afghanistan, because the war is going on within, and Taliban is just rapidly gaining more and more and more, I mean, land over there. And even the fact that 13,000 international troops remain stationed in the country has not made much of a difference, as they're getting closer and closer to missions as they're regaining territory.
So what do you think the U.S. might do to try to stop Kabul's retreat and stem the Taliban advance?
Well, to me, it seems like the U.S. strategy is to stop this Taliban gradual takeover of Afghanistan. And it wants to look like it is in control, and it wants to look like it's dominating the country. And the only solution on the part of the U.S. can be one more troop surge. They really don't have any other option now. And even though they haven't achieved anything in the last 15 years in Afghanistan, but I think they are about to go ahead with another troop surge. It might be a few weeks, it might be a few days. The visit by Mattis at this time was particularly significant. It seems the U.S. is now willing to open another war theater alongside Syria. And it's a new government, but they are just opening new, more and more battle fronts as they are going ahead. The U.S. strategy in Afghanistan now seems to have entered a decisive phase as well, because they dropped this mother of all bombs, and there could be more, so making things conducive for boots on the ground now. And the Taliban attack on Mazar Sharif recently might indicate that the Taliban feels that the next bomb is meant for them. So they intend to advance and hold more land area before any U.S. troop surge takes place. So it might have been a proactive move on their part. And what I read in the media was like 3,000 additional U.S. troops might be coming to Afghanistan, and they really cannot win this endless war. It's absolutely useless, but I think the U.S. is planning to go ahead for one more troop surge. And it just wants to go back to square one in Afghanistan. Already having spent $1 trillion there, it's not stopping, and it's just going on and on. So that's the whole thing.
And last but not least, how do you see all these events on the ground impacting on the success of the Moscow Peace Initiative, and what can be done to keep this framework relevant under such conditions?
Well, actually, maybe because the peace initiative by Russia, China, and Pakistan was making a great difference, it has prompted this mother of all bombs attack and everything, because the U.S. doesn't like it whenever any peace efforts are taking place. Like even the year before, they killed Mullah Mansour when there was some peace efforts going on, and they were like sabotaged and they couldn't be held. So I see that the reconciliation process is going to be badly affected. And Russia wanted to initiate talks with the Taliban to bring peace to Afghanistan and contain the emergence of this new outfit of ISIS, which has emerged in Afghanistan suddenly, which threatens to spread all over the region if left unchecked. China, Pakistan, and Iran, all, and Russia, are going to be affected by this ISIS. So they all support the peace initiative. The Pakistani defense minister even today has asked Russia to help stabilize Afghanistan recently. But now it seems as if the peace efforts will slow down or stay static, as it looks like a very chaotic summer is ahead. Any U.S. troop surge will further plunge the country into instability and make peace talks like merely cosmetic or impossible. The U.S. wants to look like it is in control, and it is going ahead it's just going without thinking. And this resulting chaos advertises escape, then spread, and time be one kid. The domestic situation in Afghanistan seems set to spiral out of control as the U.S. and Afghan forces will fight the Taliban with more focus instead of fighting the ISIS. They have begun to say that we attacked ISIS, but they are at the same time saying they are fighting the Taliban. So I think the real target is the Taliban and not really ISIS. So there should be more concentration on this ISIS thing if the U.S. really wants to bring peace to Afghanistan and not Taliban, because they happen to be the real stakeholders in that country right now, as the Afghan people seem to want them no matter what they like. And there's no real need to start a new war, spend more money, and effective dialogue process could have settled this entire civil war.
All right, Sabina, that was a very clear explanation of what's going on and what we can expect in the near future. And I want to thank you for coming onto our show. Thanks a lot.
Trendstorm.
So if we reflect on what our Pakistani guests share with us today on this section of Trendstorm, I think that yes, I mean, Afghanistan is a mess. The Taliban is on the offensive. Afghan National Army is on the retreat. The U.S. doesn't even know what it wants to do. All in all, we're seeing chaos, and it seems like nobody knows what the solution will be. So long as the U.S. continues to obstruct the peace process in that war-torn country, all we're going to see is more war, violence, and death. So if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Kurepko. Thank you for listening, and take care.